Stefan is going to talk to us about the treatment of iron deficiency in patients with heart failure and try and persuade us that iron deficiency is a new therapeutic target that we can do something about.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry I came a little late, and because I'm probably so large, I have no lunch this time, but that's okay. It's okay. Now, basically, it's really fantastic to see a room full of interested physicians, and I think we can tell you some good news that something can be done to improve symptoms. I may say it straight away. We cannot show you yet that you reduce morbidity and mortality as you are used to in heart failure to see from many other drugs. But maybe that also makes iron different. You are not usually seeing symptom improvements with the drugs that improve outcomes only in some cases. And so here, this is different. What are the theoretic options? Blood transfusion, I think that's a very rare option. ESAs, or EPO, double poietin alpha, erythropoiesis stimulating agents. And then you have iron, and I will discuss a little bit oral iron and intravenous iron, then some more. This is, of course, a study that is biased by association. Patients who receive a transfusion have a higher mortality. We have no randomized data available on transfusion in patients with heart failure. It is clear that this is reserved for a subgroup of patients. You may use a cut point of 9, 8.5, or 8 gram per deciliter. There is really shortage of supply for basically packages to use red blood cells. But still, it's a theoretic option for some cases, but not a realistic option for our heart failure patients. You have the second option, which was then tested in the RedHF trial, which is using erythropoiesis-stimulating agents, particularly here double poietin alpha compared to placebo. This was based on a phase 2 program in which we found, honestly, against our expectation, that such a therapy does not reliably and significantly improve symptoms, exercise capacity, or quality of life, but interestingly suggested it may reduce heart outcome endpoints of death and heart failure hospitalization. So therefore, John McMurray was amongst a group of people that designed this, and many of us were involved, and including me as PI in Germany, to really execute this study. And this was done in anemic patients who at the time were thought, when this was designed, not to have iron deficiency with a transferrin saturation of above 15%. Of course, what you just have heard makes you conclude that maybe a number of patients in RedHF had indeed iron deficiency or developed indeed iron deficiency during treatment, which there wasn't then fully corrected, because using such cut points is different than the cut points you've just seen from Piotr Ponikowski, but maybe that's a point for discussion. So in this study, it was tried to investigate outcomes. I can tell you, with double poietin alpha, you can, in a very reliable way, correct anemia and heart failure, but you do not change heart outcomes. 0.87 for the primary endpoint of death and heart failure hospitalization, also 0.5 p-value for a total mortality endpoint. One can basically say that this option is no longer an option for patients with heart failure, certainly not as tested here, where in most cases it is given to patients with anemia without addition of maybe iron. So that leads me to talk about oral iron and intravenous iron. And honestly, there is very little evidence for this, if any. There is evidence coming out now that suggests in a small study that intravenous iron compared to oral iron in a randomized study improved exercise somewhat better, that this is limited data. So really, we need to validate that as well. You need to understand that if you give oral iron, there is a maximum uptake capacity in the gut for humans of about 6 milligram per day, which means if you have a deficit that you want to correct of 1,000 to 1,500 milligram in a heart failure patient, it will take you about half a year to correct this, but only if the patient is compliant, and many of the patients aren't with oral iron. I don't know who of you have taken it. Certainly there's bad taste, there is gastrointestinal side effects, and so there is really not an option for patients who don't tolerate a strenuous therapy and who have not a lot of time to have enough iron. This takes much too long and has much too many problems. So that leaves us with intravenous iron. The intravenous iron program we did had a little over 100 patients in four different kind of studies. They lasted 3 to 6 months and included in three of the four studies anemic patients. But in one study, we did also include patients without anemia, and I'm coming to this. Mostly these studies investigated the effect on exercise capacity and symptoms. First study was Aidan Bolger, a research fellow from the Brompton Hospital, went to another hospital and then took our randomized control study design and turned it into a case study, basically, of 16 patients. Because he didn't randomize, he was 2 years faster, and sometimes you're lucky and then still get into a good journal. And so he made it into Jack, showing basically that the change in hemoglobin in the anemic patients he treated was very directly related to a change in quality of life and the also to change in 6-minute walk test. But you can see, for instance, here that he included patients up to a ferritin of 400. So there was at the time no consensus on how to really diagnose these patients. But this is a case study. So then the first double-blind study done by Dr. Tobley and colleagues in Argentina over 6 month period. The initial phase is basically 1,000 milligram of iron sucrose given in 200 milligram doses weekly, and then every 4 weeks another 200 milligram altogether over half a year. In short, you can correct iron deficiency that way. You improve kidney function that way, as measured here by creatinine clearance. And on the right side, you see markers of cardiac function, also improved NT-BNP levels and ejection fraction, but a small study with 2 times 20 patients, so limited evidence from that. Also limited evidence, 35 patients we recruited in London and in Berlin, and in Wrocław in Poland with Piotr Ponikowski. And in this study, we analyzed for the first time whether maybe not only iron deficiency anemic patients, but also iron deficiency non-anemic patients can be treated. Similar scheme, 200 milligram doses given weekly, between 800 and 1200 milligram, depending on the need, but calculated with the Ganzoni formula. And then for 18 weeks, this performed with 4 weekly injections after the first 4 weeks of correction period. You can see you can correct the iron deficiency. And here you can see that different types of exercise endpoints, exercise time, peak VO2 body weight adjusted and peak VO2 not body weight adjusted, either as a trend or significantly improved. Let me also say that New York Heart Class in this study improved. We had a stratification for anemia versus no anemia, and we saw trends in the non-anemic patients, but this was, of course, not power to achieve this in subgroups. We went on to test this then in 459 patients in a 2-to-1 randomized study, the VHF trial, in a double-blind way. Really, it took us quite a while to convince Vifor to do this in a double-blind way, because it's not easy to do this. We had black syringes, and we had curtains that cover the area of infusion. You have to have blinded and unblinded staff members. So this is really a little bit cumbersome in terms of organizational issues. We have the inclusion criteria as per what Professor Ponikowski described to you, symptomatic patients with heart failure with systolic dysfunction were included. You have not only diagnostic rules, but also you have stopping and restarting criteria. You can consider this, therefore, really a biomarker guided therapy. Over the first 4 weeks, correction and then maintenance up to half a year. Two primary endpoints, New York Heart Class and patient global assessment. Very briefly, typical heart failure population of about 67 years. Because of a hemoglobin partly inclusion criteria, these kind of studies have more women than usual. Half of the patients in the trial were women. Mean GFR at baseline about 65, mean hemoglobin, that's important, 11.9. Exactly half the patients were anemic, half the patients were non-anemic. You can see here ferritin pretty low, and these patients were well treated. Let me come briefly to the primary endpoints. When you analyze patient global assessment on New York Heart Class, you analyze how you more likely it is to be in one better class. That's a typical way of doing this. It was 2.5 times more likely to be in one class better for the patient global assessment, where you ask, do you feel a little improved, moderately improved, much improved, or of course worse, and the very worst was to be dead. And 50% of patients at the end of the study said that they were much or moderately improved versus 27 in the placebo group, highly, highly significant. Similar analysis for New York Heart Class, very significantly improved also this endpoint. More patients at the end of the study were in class 1, 2 in the iron group versus the placebo. Now, we planned this study to have their primary endpoint assessed at 24 weeks. It was a great surprise to us and everybody, I believe, that this seems to be a therapy with very fast symptom improvement after 4 weeks, already highly significantly different. This is confirmed by also looking at 6-minute walk test and 2 quality of life questionnaires. You have a highly significant and very fast improvement of quality of life, of symptom status, of exercise capacity, so of patient-reported outcomes in the patients receiving intravenous ferric carboxymaltose. Now, let's not go through all these subgroups. We didn't find a subgroup where it didn't work. Both endpoints, we can say this about, but there is one subgroup that I really would like to highlight, and that's the patients with anemia without or versus without anemia. That was the main hypothesis. There was a stratification for this, so this is the real most kind of valid subgroup analysis. The outcome was very similar in both these subgroups, so it works both ways. But now we have biochemical analysis, and that makes it interesting. The patients with anemia at baseline, yes, we corrected quite a lot the iron deficiency as measured by ferritin and transferrin saturation. But at the end of the study, we also increased their hemoglobin, which is expected, of course, but you don't know now what actually made these patients better, the correction of iron deficiency or the hemoglobin increase. So what you really need to have is the patients without anemia at baseline. Iron deficiency corrected, but no change in hemoglobin. So one group, no change in hemoglobin. The other group, change in hemoglobin. But both groups reacted positively with symptom change. So it's not the hemoglobin, it's the iron deficiency that you need to correct. Kidney function was improved. This is post-hoc analysis. We are just submitting this now. Professor Ponikowski is the leader there. 4 milliliter improvement, and this seems very encouraging. What doses did we give? Well, overall, approximately 2,000 milligram, and the patients with anemia at baseline only had slightly more need for iron in the correction phase, but then overall there was no significant difference for these patients. When it comes to safety endpoints, we analyzed different types of hospitalizations and then all-cause death or cardiovascular death. You need to really understand that you need to look at the number in brackets because it's a 2-to-1 randomization. So you need to look at the incidence per 100 patient years at risk. All the numbers here for iron in this graph are smaller for on the left side than for placebo. Nothing is significant. These p-values are only for information. This is, of course, not designed for this. But things go in the right direction, and which may be a promising future target. What about reported adverse events? Gastrointestinal problems, 17 versus 7% in injection site reactions, 6 overall amongst like 3,000 injections for iron versus 0 in the placebo group. That's about all we can say in terms of adverse things. As I said, in oral iron, you have 30 to 40% adverse reactions. One small hint in regards to mortality from this Dr. Tobley study is now available, a 5-year follow-up. It seems that events go in the right direction. But of course, this is a very small study, and we need to see whether we can have something more in the future. Let me summarize from FHF, promising results, primary endpoints, New York Heart Class, and patient global assessment. Many consider soft, but these are patient-reported outcomes. The follow-up is not long enough repeated doses of 200 milligram. We have two new trials, one led by Professor van Veldhuizen, one from Professor Ponikowski, that try to validate these findings and extend them to longer follow-up, up to 1 year, to other endpoints. In this study, to 6-minute walk test, confirm HF, effect HF using 6-minute walk test. These studies are ongoing and will report in the next year or two. Research is basically that evidence-based, you have 200 milligram dosing, but if you try then to buy this, it's 500 milligrams. It's faster, it's quicker to do this. In our practice, we are also doing this in the new trials, a 500 milligram or 1,000 milligram dosing, which is possible with felcarboxymaltose, is used. And then, of course, you may give a cycle of therapy, patient improves, and then either you see whether they deteriorate again or you find biochemical abnormalities, but you do not need to, at this moment, we don't see that, continuously treat these patients maybe for long term, but always like 3, 4, or 5 months cycles. What do people do in reality? They still use oral iron. I think this needs to change. This is in the analysis that Piotr already mentioned in 5 countries in Europe. Blood transfusions rarely given. ESAs sometimes given. Intravenous iron is the rarest of all, but as we would say now, with the one option that has the best evidence. So I think we need to change our practice, and that leaves me just to conclude that this treatment is now for the improvement of symptoms in patients with systolic heart failure and iron deficiency, also mentioned in the guidelines, that you may consider this for your therapeutic approach. Thank you so much.
And just to really summarize the take-home messages, you can read these in front of you. I think we've seen very convincing evidence that iron deficiency is very common in patients with chronic heart failure. It's certainly associated with much worse symptoms, impaired functional capacity, high morbidity, high mortality. By restoring iron, we can at least improve symptoms and functional capacity. We still await outcome data.